Session number 12241, Mr. William Laverick, Reel 9.
Mr. Laverick, Reel 9. We're talking about your time with, 409 Searchlight Battery, the 5th Northumberland Fusiliers, at your base near Seaham Harbour.
Somewhere out that way, yes. At Darlington's were at, with a place called Sedbergh.
Sedbergh, not Seaham Harbour then?
Not Seaham Harbour. We moved to Sedbergh. You see, we were very rarely, you weren't left in one place all the time. You'd move to another position.
So, but the first place was Seaham Harbour.
It was done by Seaham Harbour, the first
place. That's where you got your searchlight
first. That's where the searchlight was.
How would you
that's where we got all equipment.
How did you organise your 8 men to cover all the jobs then?
Well, you had surplus, you see. You had one man for the cook. You had one man for the office telephonist. You must always have someone on duty. But as time went on, of course, we found different methods of working the office. So the telephone, what we'd done was put a bell up outside to the telephone so that when the telephone went, if you were in the cookhouse, you could still hear the bell and nip across and answer the phone. But as I say, the phones weren't all that much used. It was the dispatch rider that done the work. But you had your cook. You had your fatigue men. You had fatigues had to be done. You had your workmen because you had to be digging in and whatnot, the searchlight. And then you had your number one, number two for
what
the searchlight. That was the person that, the number one was the person on the arm, the searchlight arm.
They moved it round.
Moved it round. And elevated. You see, you had the wheel at the end, and you walked around with it, and you were turning the wheel for elevation. And then we had the number one, and he was the one that put in the switch. He was the one that put in the switch when the light was called for. And you see, you had two lights on a searchlight. You had your beam, and you had what they call the diffuse light. And
what was the difference, sorry?
Well, one was for holding an aircraft in the air. You got the distance to hold the aircraft in the beam, in the air. And the other one is if the aircraft dived down the beam to fire at the sight, you diffused the beam so that it ran into a blinding light. You diffused the beam and it made a wide beam. He was diving down a wide beam. You could keep your eye on him all the time. He was also being blinded as he came to the light, you see. This was the idea.
So you'd have the two men on, you know, one on that, the two men on that.
That's right.
And you'd have the chap on the generator.
The chap, always one at the generator. And at night time, you always had your sentry at the generator end. He was always at the
generator. Is that as well as the generator man? Or
No. You trained every man on the site to start the generator. Whoever was on sentry duty at the site and the generator was called for, he had to be able to start it and put the juice through.
Now, had you ever had any training with an extra aeroplane? Because it's not that, I'm not sure that it's that easy to use a...
Oh, yes, the aeroplanes, we at the start, every night. But before the aeroplane, actually, they had a system of ensuring that everyone were on their toes. What they used to do, the headquarters also had a searchlight. And they didn't give you any time. You always had to have someone on sentry duty after dark. As soon as dusk came, the man was always on sentry duty. And he was always watching in the direction where headquarters was, because at some time, the light used to go on at headquarters. As soon as that light went on, they were timed. They timed each light to see how long it took them to get onto their light. You see, theirs was the centre spot. And we had to switch around. But of course, when we got to know where headquarters was, we left the searchlight there, so it was quicker to get on. And every unit were racing to see who could be first onto the...
Could you see it from Walworth?
You could see searchlight for miles and miles and miles. You could see a light for miles.
About how far?
Once it was well, it depended upon the cloud, mind. It depended upon the cloud.
Given it being clear.
Clear, you would easily see searchlight 20 mile. We could see them over Newcastle and searchlight from when we moved up to right into the Northumberland Wilds. I was moving our sight up there, and we could see them right away down in the Durham area from up there on a clear night. You could see them anywhere, Hank, for miles and miles. You would see them for up to 50 miles if you were in a position, if you were in a high position. The lights could be seen.
And did you have... Now, that was one way of practising, getting onto the headquarters beam.
That's right.
What about with real planes?
Then the planes. They start sending the plane up. And what happened was, you'd be told that at a certain time, a plane was going to cross in a certain area. Right? Now, you had a sound locator. We had what they called a sound locator. Very, very primitive. It was a tube. That's all there were. A long tube up on the stand. And you put the headphones on. And you turned this big tube till you got what you thought was directly on the plane. So you see, you also had to train your men on sound locator. And it was a peculiar thing.
And where was that? Where was the locator? Was that next to the...
It was situated away from the light, not far away from the light.
So that's another man. Would that man be on that?
Oh, yes, you had your... Every man was trained to every job on the
site. But would there always be someone on the sound locator?
They only went on the sound locator if you got word that there were planes in the area. Any plane in the area at night. Immediately went on the sound locator.
So when you saw the sound locator would use this primitive thing.
Well, it was primitive then. You see, we hadn't got any GLs or anything then. We just had sound locators, what they call sound locators. It was just a big, great big tube, and you turned it. And you had a bar on. You turned it, and you had headphones, and you had the electrical contrivances inside for to attract the sound. And it was a peculiar thing, but there was no two persons ever had the sound in the same place. I always got the sound here, at the back of the head. Some people used to get it here, some used to get it here.
The top of the head or the side of the head?
Some used to get it nice. Mine was always more to the back of the head, nice. See, I was on when, you see, in the training, you set the sound away, and they brought it round. Or a plane came over, and they brought it round, and they used to shout on. And you took the bearing, and so they immediately showed the searchlight, the bearing, elevation. You had the elevation on the sound locator also, you see. Showed the elevation, and immediately searchlight up to the bearing elevation. And because of speed of aircraft, you usually were in front. You were a little bit in front. And this was the drill that you were constantly working at.
And these planes were deliberately sent across for you to practice?
At night, so deliberately. Actually, I was up twice. I was fortunate. I'd been a site commander, and I had been made up the sergeant. I had been made up a sergeant as a site commander. I didn't realise what I'd been made up to sergeant for then, mind. I got to know a week later. And they made me up as a sergeant, site commander. And we used to go up in a training. What sort was it again, no? But he used to take us right up from Berwick, right away from Berwick, down to past Seam Harbour and around on a sort of triangular flight. And I was twice up and saw all the searchlights coming on to him and such like. And that was to give you an idea of just how it looked in the plane when the lights were on.
How long would it take you to get a plane on from when you first heard it or... were aware of it, to getting it caught in the beam? That would be the idea, would it? To get it in the beam.
It was to get it
in
the beam.
And then follow it.
That's right. Into the beam and follow.
And how long would it take? From?
Well, you were very, very poor if you couldn't get it up in 2 minutes.
And the plane caught?
Caught. If you had a good sound locator man and whatnot.
Was it once you got a plane in the beam, was it easy enough to keep it in there or...?
It was easy to keep in the beam once you got it in, because they flew on a level course, you see. They flew at a level speed. You had none of the high speed planes and things that you've got now.
It was
a very easy movement to keep them in there, to keep them.
And that would be the job of the elevator, the chap on the controls, would it?
And you see, that was the chap on the control that held it all the time and brought it, and he could hold it, and then after it passed. He had to make his run around there to get it to the other side, to keep it in. it wasn't as easy, you see, because as it's passing over, you kind of turn your searchlight over and down the other side. You had to run around with it and catch him going out. You had to catch him going out to keep him in. But you see, by the time he was caught, you were okay because everybody else seen and everyone else were on him. So he didn't have one on him. He had four or five on him all the time.
From the other sides?
All the other sides were on him. All your sides were on him, you see.
So it didn't matter, this little gap while he was running, you know, changing.
Oh, it made no difference because the others were on. And
now, were you actually linked in any way to the artillery? I mean, the purpose of having the searchlight on them was presumably for the anti-aircraft.
For the anti-aircraft guns, for the gunners. It was for the gunners.
Did you have any actual link with them, or were you independent of them?
We were independent, completely independent of the gunners.
So you wouldn't ring them up and tell them you'd got them? The gunners would just watch for themselves?
That's right. All they had to do was see them. All we were concerned about was getting the plane in the searchlight beam. That's all we were concerned about. But anyway, I was made up to sergeant at the time.
When about? Was that at CM or later on?
That was when I was at Sedbergh.
Now, you weren't at CM long then?
No, we weren't CM long.
You got your beams, you got your...
But the reason we weren't there long, this was a peculiar thing. I told you before that there was 409 battery, there was 410 battery, right? Now, 409 battery were going out and putting up the huts and digging out the searchlight emplacements and putting the searchlights in and whatnot. 410 battery were a sedentary battery. There were people that had been brought in from offices and all this, that and the other, you see? And they weren't workers. And unfortunately for us, when we got the sites prepared and such like, and got our drill practice and everything in, they would move in, take the site over, we would have to go and make another site somewhere else. We were doing the work for them. We were doing it. We were doing all the excavating and everything for them to move into. They were taking over from us all the time.
Did you realise that at the time?
We did, oh yes.
What did you think?
We used to get at them. And then, because of the anger, it must have been the shindies that we used to kick up and such like in the mess. I was in the sergeant's mess and whatnot now, you see. And because of all this, what happened was people from 409 were now being drafted to 410 and were making quite a good living. Because, you see, slip trenches and everything had to be dug as well as the, what they call it, and they were taking payment from the ones with the cash. A lot of these people were being paid by their firms and they were taking the payment to dig during the night. There were that stints for them. And you see, it was a peculiar thing, but the 409 battery lads that were transferred through into 410 were doing all the work and doing nearly all the sentry duty, but they were getting paid for it because they were charging these chaps for doing the sentry duties also. They were making quite a good living out of it.
You weren't transferred, though?
I was never transferred there, but I got no other reason. A week after, I was made up to a sergeant.
So you went from CM then to Sedbergh.
To Sedbergh.
Near Darlington.
That's right.
And there you put up another site.
We had to start another site, to start and get it all arranged. And the huts were there though. The engineers had got cracking and the huts were on the site at Sedbergh. Well, I know Sedbergh well because actually it was from Sedbergh that I got married. I managed to get 48-hour leave. I got a 48-hour leave from Sedbergh for to get married. We had arranged to get married, and it was at Sedbergh that I put the bands in. I put the bands in Sedbergh Church and whatnot, so I know that place well. And I remember getting the 48 hours, coming home, getting married, and going back to the site. And I'd no sooner gone back to the site than I was told I had to go to headquarters. So I went down to headquarters.
Where was that then?
Walworth Castle.
It was still at Walworth Castle,
at least. And I went down to headquarters at Walworth Castle and I was told I was being sent on a course. I'd already been on one course, gas course, which had only been a few days, but I was going to be sent on an aircraft identification course. And I thought, well, that's queer. Why send me? And I said to one of the sergeants, the senior sergeant at headquarters, I says, why pick on me? Well, he says, you know as well as I do, Bill, he says, we are much older than you. He says, you can take it in much better than what we can. He says, I don't know where you will do good, he says, to get away from the site, he says, anyway, under these courses. So I was sent up on this, to this identification of aircraft course. And it was a fortnight's course, and I enjoyed it. Came back, got a job going around the sites, teaching the persons on these sites aircraft identification. I had all the various aircraft on little cards and teaching them. And then later on, they got people going into headquarters where they could see them on a big screen and have to tell the people in headquarters what planes they were.
Was it easy?
We were teaching them on the sites, and they were going to headquarters and being tested at headquarters.
Was it easy enough then to identify the planes? Were there many to learn?
There was the German planes we weren't so worried about, because there were only like your Hinkels and your Dorniers that could actually get to this country, the bombers. We knew the area we were, we wouldn't see any German fighters, because we knew by then that the German fighters could only come over the channel and be so long there and have to dive back. You see, the German fighters didn't have the range for where we were. Although they did, it was the Wright bombers that came across Darklington. But they were very, very easy identifiable. But
you could hear the difference as well, couldn't you?
Well, we hadn't been told this then, that there was a difference in sound. All we were told was the various wing differences, the tail differences. But besides the Germans, you also had to know all your English, because they were flying all the time as well, you see. And we had to know the English fighters. So, of course, we had to know the German fighters also, the Junkers and the Messerschmitts. We had to know them as well, you see. So you had this completely new field of work to have to get on with. So there was always something to do on the sites. Always something to do on the sites. You were always working on it. On a searchlight site. And as I say, it was hard, because you had your water to bring in, everyone had to be able to cook, everyone had to do each other's jobs. And as site commander, it was your job to say that this was all done.
Had you actually had any German aircraft come across up to, while you were, you know, at Seam or Sedberg?
We'd had reports of them, but we hadn't seen any. But we'd been stood out, and we'd had searchlights on searching. But whether they were our own planes that we heard, or whether they were so German planes. But German planes had come over. German planes had come over because there'd been a landmine dropped at Acklington, at Amble. A landmine dropped just outside of Amble, a place called Hawksby. The landmine had been dropped there. So the Germans had definitely been over. My wife was in action before me. She was nursing. She was with the Red Cross. She was a nurse, so she was with the Red Cross at home when they brought the casualties in from Hawksley. So she was in action before I was. But anyway, I came back from this course on aircraft identification. I went round the sites. I wasn't a site commander now. I was now doing aircraft identification.
So where were you based?
Headquarters.
So you're at Walworth
Castle. I was at Walworth Castle then. And I was doing the sites.
That's in Northumberland, isn't it?
Durham.
Right.
It's down beside Darlington. Down beside Darlington. And I was handy. I had a motorbike now to go around the sites. So I was got on well with the various site commanders and whatnot. I used to have to stop on a site, you see, for a time. Got another various cookings and all this and the other on the way around the good sites where you wanted a meal to be there at a certain time and such like. And going around from site to site and giving them this. And then I was called in again to Walworth and told that I was going on a course. Another course. And I went to York. Went to the railway gymnasium on a PA course. And I had a splendid time there. We stopped in houses in York. It belonged to the Roundtree family. Terrace houses belonged to the Roundtree family.
About what time of year would this be? I mean, the war starts in September.
The war starts in September, and this would be everything happened quickly at the start of the war. All this, it took no time at all, you know, to get the searchlights and whatnot. And this would be This was be 1940, the beginning of 1940.
So you'd been at Seaham and Sedbergh in 1939.
That's right.
You know, moving
and
through.
Moving through different sites in 1939. And I was sent down to this. And it must have been, no, it must have been the back end of 1939. Everything happened quickly to me at the beginning of the war.
So about December.
And it must have been the winter, because we're in these, that's right, it was the winter, because we had the fires on in the houses. They weren't central heated, it was fires. We used to light, the fires in the houses where we were billeted in. We were billeted in the road, the terrace houses belonged to Roundtrees. But I enjoyed this course. It was a PE course, and I was a very fit man. I could run, I could walk, and they decided that this phony war, that the people on sites and whatnot were getting out of condition, and they wanted someone for to get them back into condition. So I went down there and I had this course. I think it lasted a month, right through.
What were you learning? I mean,
we weren't learning anything. We were setting out programs for searchlight sites, for not only searchlight sites, gun sites also, for these sites where people didn't get the exercise. You see, you didn't get any much exercise on these sites.
And what sort of exercise?
It had to be, the thing is, you had to be in a position, if ever there were paratroops, you had to be in a position to run at the fight, which you were getting out of condition. You see, there was no guarantee you were in this condition. But anyway, I had this and I got on well at York, and I came back. And for a short time, I was useful. I was doing searchlight. I was doing PE plus the aircraft identification.
Going around the sites.
And what I'd done was set a programme on the sites. And I was very, very fortunate that all I'd done, I went to a certain site and I would send a message, I would phone in from the site to say that the site, I was going to take them out on a training run and such like, but that the searchlight people wouldn't be there during the day. And the reason you had to do this was because someone may come in during the day and ask you to do your drill. You may get one of these junior officers coming during the day and ask you to do your searchlight drill. So I used to warn them that I may not be on the site, so that if anybody was coming around for to get these people to wake them up, sort of style, they wouldn't come onto that site, you see. So what I'd do, I'd take them out on a walk and run, a 6 mile walk and run outside the site. Then I'd bring them in and I'd give them a complete programme of how to keep fit, keep all the muscles of the body fit, jumps and this, that and the other. And I used to put them through it until they start to enjoy it. They start to feel the difference and start to enjoy it, you see. And I used to leave that site and tell the site commander, right, if you give them this programme at a certain time in the morning, it's not a long programme, and the walking and the run can be done around the site, you're still on site, you see, you're still on site. And we worked these programmes out for them. And
how long would it take you at each site to get it, to get the lads...
I only stopped a few days at each, 2 or 3 days at each site, because you could reckon out on a site the people that wanted this and the people that had to be compelled, you know. And if a person wasn't capable, he knew he was going to get the job as site cook, and he didn't want to be site cook every day in the week. He wanted his turns off, so he would do it to make sure that he wasn't given a job like that, you see. This is the point. You could put a site commander could work his site so that anybody that was suspect could very soon be put into place. Toilet duties and this, that and the other, because remember, you had trenches to fill in and shift your toilets. And if you got anybody that you knew were trying to skive, you could soon sort them out and get them out of it by this sort of method. And I used to go around the sites, and then I was called into headquarters one day. And what had happened was that it must have been in the 39, because I was called into headquarters and told that conscription was starting, that the forces were going overseas, and that replacement, they were needing a replacement, the conscription was starting. And that I was being drafted to Hardwick Camp, search field. I was being drafted to Hardwood Camp. And I'd report to Hardwick Camp, and I'd get no more duties when I got there. So I was sent to Hardwick, and great camp it was. Aircraft identification, I was well up on that. PE, I took charge of PE at Hardwick Camp. Everyone had to do it first thing in the morning, even officers. Something new for me. And
Which unit? Were you still with the 409, or was this who was running Hardwick Camp?
No, it was a unit set up from outside. It was an outside unit because.
Do you know who it was?
I don't know what unit it was. All we were doing was to what was set up for. We had to go and meet the trains, and get the civilians off the trains, march them to the camp, put them into huts. I was in charge of one of the huts now. We had sleeping quarters in each hut, you see. Each hut had its sleeping quarters. And we used to get with units and we had to drill them. Rifle drill. I was actually back to infantry. With the aircraft, because even infantry had to know the aircraft. So I was on aircraft identification. Gas drill, we used to give them gas. We had a gas hut. Take them through the gas huts and give them their gas drill and such like, and then get them onto square and give them their square bashing. And then we had what PE every morning before breakfast. Had your gunfire after PE, pot of gunfire, what we call gunfire, Epsom salts and inside your tea and whatnot, make sure it was kept healthy. And then we used to take them out on the march. Once we got them, you couldn't take them out straight away because civilians could never march at the same step, you see. You had to teach them how to march at the same step, do everything. You had to teach them everything, discipline, from the start. And now we used to take them out, once we got them satisfactory on the square, we used to be allowed to take them out on the march. And we used to have a route marches with your various sections. You used to take your own section out on route marches. And then you used to get them to the stage where you took them out, march and run, full kit, march and run. And in 6 weeks, we used to have them proficient for the...
So it was a basic training camp?
It was a basic training camp.
What sort of material were the conscripts coming in? I mean, were they good?
They were very, very poor, some of them, at the start. The health of the conscripts... For an athlete would say they were useless. They were useless for an athlete. But to go, you know, if paratroops dropped and you had to go into action, they couldn't have possibly done it. They couldn't have run. You see, you had to teach them. You would teach them from the start. I would say you were fortunate in a unit if you got half a dozen that were really of good standard athletic, and you used to sort them out straight away and you put them in charge of certain groups and you put them on different exercises in different places, you see.
And at the end of 6 weeks, how much progress would they have made?
Excellent progress. No, this used to surprise people, but it was the discipline, the regulation that got them, the regular habits that got them. They were in excellent condition after 6 weeks. You had them in very good condition, and they could go into an army unit and stick up with anyone after 6 weeks. Except, I would say, they wouldn't have been able to stay with the paratroops or the. Of course, there were no paratroops in that time. I was down at Aldershot when the first paratroop regiment was started.
So you were now just you're an instructor. Did you have any links with your old unit at all?
Yes, I had links with them. And
what sort?
We had a hut on the site, and these from the various units, they used to send. I think it was a man from each site used to come into Hardwick Camp. On a basic PE course, and they used to be there for a fortnight on a PE course. And when the units stopped, when the conscripts stopped coming to Hardwick, I was actually put onto the hut where these were coming in, and there was a chap from the Army Physical Training Corps in charge of this hut, you see. And he'd seen me working with the various lads that I had on the what they call it, and when they stopped bringing the conscripts into Hardwick, he contacted the camp commandant and he saw him straight away and asked if I could be transferred over to his section. He could use me. And what happened was that He was also responsible for all the searchlight sites, you see. Where I had been going on the sites one time, they had this fully experienced chap from Aldershot. So
How long were you at Hardwick Camp on the basic training, instructing?
I must have been there. I took three lots through, so I'd been there for 18 weeks. I took three lots through on 6 weeks training.
So that would be into 1940 then?
That would be into 1940 now. It must have been, because we'd taken these people in when the other forces had gone overseas.